Chapter 1, A New View of Reality, the Universe as a Consciousness Computer. We live our lives based in what we believe. When we think about the truth of this statement, we immediately recognize a startling reality. Beyond anything else that we may actually do in our lives, the beliefs that precede what we do are the foundation of all that we cherish, dream, become, and accomplish. From the morning rituals that we go through to greet the world each day and the technology that we use to make our lives better, to the technology that destroys life through war, our personal routines, our community rituals, our religious ceremonies, and entire civilizations are based upon our beliefs. Not only do our beliefs provide the structure for the way we live our lives, now the same areas of study that have discounted our inner experiences in the past are showing us that the way we feel about the world is a force that extends into the world around us. In this way, science is catching up with what our most cherished spiritual and indigenous traditions have always told us, that our world is nothing more than a reflection of what we accept in our beliefs. And this leads to our second belief code. Belief Code 2 states that we live our lives based upon what we believe about our world, ourselves, our capabilities, and our limits. With this statement in mind, to say that our beliefs are important to life is an understatement. Our beliefs are life. They are where life begins and how life sustains itself. From our immune response and the hormones that regulate and balance our bodies, to our ability to heal bones, organs, and skin, and even to conceive life itself, the role of human belief is quickly taking center stage in the new frontier of quantum biology and quantum physics. If our beliefs hold so much power, and if we live our lives based on what we believe, then the obvious question is, where do our beliefs come from? The answer may surprise you, because with few exceptions, our beliefs come from what science, history, religion, culture, and our families tell us. In other words, the essence of our capabilities and our limits may well be based in what other people tell us. And that realization leads to the next question that we must ask ourselves. If our lives are based on the beliefs of others, then what if those beliefs are wrong? What if we're living our lives shrouded within the false limitations and incorrect assumptions that other people have formed over generations, centuries, or even millennia? Historically, for example, we've been taught that we are insignificant specks of life passing through a brief moment in time, limited by the laws of space, atoms, and DNA. This view suggests that we'll have little effect upon anything during our time in this world, and when we're gone, the universe will never even notice our absence. Well, while the words of this description may sound a little harsh, the general idea is not so far from what many of us today have been conditioned to believe. It's precisely these beliefs that often leave us feeling small and helpless in the face of life's greatest challenges. Well, what if we're more than this? Could it be that we're really very powerful beings in disguise? What if we're delegates of a miraculous potential, born into this world with capabilities beyond our wildest dreams, capabilities that we've simply forgotten in the conditions that have shocked us into the illusion of being powerless? How would our lives change, for example, if we discovered that we're born with the power to reverse disease? Or what if we could choose the peace in our world, the abundance in our lives, and even how long we live? What if we found that the universe itself is directly affected by a power that we've hidden from ourselves for so long that we've forgotten it's even ours? Such a radical discovery would change everything. It would change what we believe about ourselves, the universe, and our role within that universe. And it's also precisely what the leading-edge discoveries of our day are showing us. For centuries, there have been people who refused to accept the limitations that have traditionally defined what it means to live in this world. To answer their yearning for a greater truth, they had to venture beyond the boundaries of their own conditioning. They isolated themselves, separate from friends, from family and their community, and let go, really let go, of what they had been taught about their world. And when they did, something precious and beautiful happened in their lives. They discovered a new freedom for themselves that opened the door of possibilities for others, and it all began by asking the question that was just as bold in their time as it is in ours today. What if our beliefs are wrong? As we'll see in the story of the yogi that follows, it's in our absolute surrender to such a choice that we discover the freedom that tells us who we really are. My personal belief, however, is that we don't have to live in a cold, damp cave like a yogi in the middle of nowhere and give away all that we love and hold dear to find such a freedom. I also believe that personal freedom begins with a personal commitment to know who we are in this universe. When we make such a commitment, everything from the way we think of ourselves to the way we love will change. They must, because we are changed in the presence of the deeper understandings. It all comes back to what we believe. While it may sound too simple to be true, I believe that the universe works precisely this way. A miracle set in stone. In the 9th century AD, the great Tibetan yogi Milarepa began a personal retreat to master his body, a journey that would last until his death at the age of 84. Earlier in his life, Milarepa had already accomplished many seemingly miraculous yogic abilities, such as the power of using psychic heat to warm his body in the harsh Tibetan winters. After exhausting his initial supplies of food, Milarepa began to nourish himself from the meager vegetation that grew near his cave. For many years, the nettle plants that grew in the vast expanse of Tibet's high desert were all that he ate. Without any substantial food or clothing or companionship to interrupt his inner focus, Milarepa lived on almost nothing. His only human contact was the occasional pilgrim that stumbled upon the cave that sheltered him, and the reports of those who did happen to find him describe a frightening sight. The little clothing that he had when he began his retreat had weathered into sparse shreds of almost nothing that left him virtually naked. Due to the lack of nutrition in his diet, Milarepa had shrunk to little more than a living skeleton with his long hair and skin turning a dull green from the overdose of chlorophyll from the nettles. He looked like a living ghost. The deprivation that he imposed upon himself, although extreme, however, did lead him to his goal of yogic mastery. Before his death in 1135 AD, Milarepa left proof of his freedom from the physical world in the form of a miracle that modern scientists say simply should not exist. And that miracle is the reason I'm sharing this story. I wanted to see the place where he had breached the laws of physics to free himself and all who witnessed from our beliefs of what is possible and what is not. I'd first heard about Milarepa from a Sikh mystic who became my yoga teacher in the 1980s. For years, I'd studied the mystery surrounding the yogi's journey throughout the sacred plateau of central Tibet, and what he discovered as a devoted mystic. Well, it was in 1998 that I led a group pilgrimage along a route that would take us directly to Milarepa's cave. 19 days after the trip began, I found myself in the great yogi's retreat, standing precisely where he had stood nearly 800 years before. With my face only inches away from the wall of the cave, I was staring squarely into the mystery that Milarepa left behind. I looked in wonder at the smooth black walls of the cave that surrounded me, and I could only imagine what it would be like living in such a cold, dark, and remote place for so many years. While Milarepa had lived in as many as 20 different retreats throughout his lifetime, it was his meeting with a student in this particular cave that set it apart from all others. To demonstrate his yogic mastery, Milarepa performed two feats that skeptics have never duplicated. The first was when he moved his hand through the air with such speed and force that he created the shock wave of a sonic boom echoing and reverberating against the rock walls throughout the cavern. I tried this on my own, by the way, with no luck. The second feat was the one I'd waited nearly 15 years, traveled halfway around the world, and acclimated to some of the world's highest elevations for 19 days to see. To demonstrate his mastery over the limits of the physical world, Milarepa had placed his open hand against the cave's wall at about shoulder level, and then he continued to push his hand further into the rock in front of him, as if the wall did not even exist. When he did so, the rock beneath his palms became soft and malleable, leaving the deep impression of his hand for all to see. When the student who witnessed this feat tried to do the same thing for himself, however, it's recorded that all he accomplished was the frustration of an injured hand. As I opened my palm and placed it into the impression of Milarepa's hand, I could feel my fingertips cradled in the form of the yogi's hand in precisely the position that his fingers had assumed 800 years earlier, a feeling that was both humbling and inspiring at the same time. The fit was so perfect that any doubt I had about the authenticity of the handprint quickly disappeared. Immediately, my thoughts turned to the man himself. I wanted to know what was happening to him when he merged with that rock. What was he thinking? What was he feeling? How did he defy the physical laws telling us that two things, like a hand and a rock, cannot be in the same place at the same time? In anticipation of my question, our Tibetan translator, Zhenla, answered before I even asked him. He has belief, Zhenla stated in a matter-of-fact voice. The Geshe, he said, which is a Tibetan word for great teacher, believes that he and the rock are not separate. I was fascinated at the way our 20th century guide spoke of the 800-year-old yogi in the present tense as if he were in the room with us. Zhenla continued, the Geshe's meditation teaches him that he is part of the rock, he said. The rock cannot contain him. To him, this cave is not a wall, so he can move freely as if the rock does not exist. Did he leave this impression to demonstrate his mastery for himself? I asked. No, Zhenla said. The Geshe does not need to prove himself to himself. The yogi lived in this place for many years, but we see only one handprint. I looked around for signs of other prints somewhere in the shallow cave. Our guide was right. I didn't see any. The hand in the rock is not for the Geshe, Zhenla continued. It's for his student. It made perfect sense. When Milarepa's student saw his master do something that traditional beliefs said could not happen, it helped him break free of his beliefs of what is possible. He saw his teacher's mastery with his own eyes, and because he witnessed the miracle personally, his experience told his mind that he was not limited or bound by the laws of reality as they were known at the time. In witnessing such a miracle, Milarepa's student was faced with the same dilemma that faces each of us when we choose to free ourselves from the limits of our own beliefs. He had to reconcile his personal experience of his teacher's miracle with what those around him believed and accepted as possible. The dilemma is this. The universe that was embraced by the family, friends, and people of the student's day asked him to accept one way of seeing the world and how things work. And this included the belief that the rock of a cave is a barrier to the flesh of a human body. On the other hand, the student had just been shown that there are exceptions to such laws. The irony was that both ways of seeing the world were absolutely correct. Each one depended upon the way that someone chooses to think of the world in a given moment in time. In other words, what they believe. So I asked myself the question, could the same thing be happening in our lives today? As far-fetched as this question may sound in light of our scientific knowledge and technological advances, modern scientists are beginning to describe a similar irony. Using the language of quantum physics rather than yogic miracles, a growing number of leading-edge scientists now suggest that the universe and everything in the universe is what it is because of the force of consciousness itself. Our beliefs and what we accept as the reality of our world. Interestingly, the more we understand the relationship between our inner and outer experiences in our world, the less far-fetched this suggestion becomes. While the story of Milarepa's cave is a powerful example of one man's journey to discover his relationship to the world, we don't need to seclude ourselves in a cave and eat nettles until we turn green to discover the same truth for ourselves. The scientific discoveries of the last 150 years have already shown that the relationship between consciousness, reality, and belief exists. Are we willing to accept the relationship we've been shown so we can apply it in our lives in a meaningful way? Only through the future that is on the horizon will we know how we've answered this question.